Welcome to the show. This is Paul Nichols, your host. You're listening to It's Your Money, the financial podcast that pulls back the curtain on the financial services industry and exposes the truth about money and investing. I hope this finds you well. I'm in a bit of a happy and giddy mood today. I can't speak to why, outside of a really good diet lately and trying to watch my health. I feel very good, and I am excited today for a couple of reasons. It's the holiday season, which is, as I get older, I become a little more sentimental and seem to enjoy more as time goes by. And we've just finished the 11th month of 2010 as it relates to the market, that being November 30th. And I've got a market update that is quite exciting to share with you today because the market has certainly been screaming back from 08. You know, 09 and 10 have really verified the adage that one out of 3 years the market's down and two out of 3 years the market's up. And this is why we invest in the market for the long haul. And so what I want to do today is what I try to do every week. I did miss last week. It was a Thanksgiving week. But I will do the next couple weeks, next few weeks, maybe miss Christmas, and the first few weeks of January, I'll be traveling a fair amount. So this will be the market update for 11:30, and let me explain why I do the market update on a regular basis. We believe that the market is efficient and that one should simply, as it relates to investing in the market, the rules are fairly simple. Own equities, diversify, understanding the concept of dissimilar price movement and correlation and modern portfolio theory that was authored and pioneered by the incomparable Dr. Harry Markowitz, who won the Nobel Prize, along with Merton Miller and William Sharp. And then, of course, applying the concept that we believe the market is efficient, that all the prices of goods and services are figured in instantaneously. Only new news would change the prices. And anyone that may be privy to that news prior to the announcement of that news that would instantaneously change prices might be involved in what they call insider trading, which would be illegal. So in other words, we believe the market is efficient, that supply and demand works. Economics 101 is applied here, and in fact, that's what makes the stock market the best wealth entity producing, the best wealth producing entity known to man, for those that understand the academic truths in science and apply those. And that is, own equities, diversify. We want to own suntan lotion and umbrellas. We want to understand that we don't know what asset class is going to be the loser or winner in any given year, but we should own all of them. And that we should rebalance on a regular basis to lock in our gains and buy up more shares in those asset classes that are low, because at some point those asset classes will turn around and be high. See, folks, for those of you that are real layman, asset classes will be made up of like large companies, small companies, growth companies, value companies, international, cash, bonds, T-bills. These would be examples of different asset classes. Think of your portfolio as a big basket that has little baskets in it, and in those baskets are eggs, and those eggs are stocks. So really what you want to have is a well-diversified portfolio that is generally made up of an array of mutual funds. One mutual fund should replicate each asset class. So when you're done, you're going to have a total diversified portfolio because you own everything. You never know what's going to be up. So what percentage of each of those asset classes you would own would really determine on your would be determined based on your risk, and this is not the format to get into that type of specifics. But in general, what we're trying to do is understand that the market is efficient. It works efficiently. We want to take advantage of the market. We're not trying to beat the market. The challenge with trying to beat the market for the very few that do it, which is about 15% of the managers in any given year beat the market about half the time, is the sheer cost associated with doing so. And as a result, what we have is a lot of cost. Now, if we could recoup the cost of active trading in our market, I would be a proponent of active management. But I am not a proponent of active management, nor have I found any academic of note that is a proponent of active management. So what I'm trying to say to you, ladies and gentlemen, is we do a market update every week or so to try to communicate all the different asset classes with the understanding that you should own them all if you have a well-diversified portfolio. By not owning them all, I would step out, and I'm going to be brass if I may, and say that you're not diversified and you're not going to catch what's up. See, ladies and gentlemen, if you only own two or three asset classes, you better make sure those are the ones that are up all the time. And it's impossible. No one's been able to do it. It's just an impossibility. There's a lot of predictors, and it's nothing more than, I like to refer to it, I coined this from Mark Matson, investainment. It's just, all the news and all the stuff that you hear, it's just entertainment, really. When you look at the sheer basic concept of investing and how simple it is from an academic perspective, there's no need to try to read every article and stay ahead of the market. And anyone that implies that they have some insight to the market that the rest of us don't, we have to wonder what their motivation is. With that being said, not going on a rant, and that's not like me, by the way. I jest. In fact, I'm a rant major every so often. But anyway, like I say, I'm in a good mood today. December 1st, holiday season. I love this time of year. It's the time of year where you notice people kind of change a little bit. You know, they hold the door open, maybe let you in traffic or whatever. I just, holiday season, I love it. It makes us, at least it makes me kind of reminisce and ponder on what it is to be a human and a compassionate capitalist. Boy, did I just say that, a compassionate capitalist? Is there any such thing, ladies and gentlemen? Well, if you don't believe there's any such thing as a compassionate capitalist, I encourage you to go to YouTube and type in the name Milton Friedman, who is a very well-known economist who might give you a couple nuggets of insight that may get you to think a little differently or have a paradigm shift if you believe that capitalism cannot be compassionate. Oh, let me not go on a rant. Market update. November 30th, 2010. Here's where we're sitting, ladies and gentlemen. We are sitting with the Russell 2500 Index, which measures the performance of small to mid-cap companies, at 17.7%. Ladies and gentlemen, almost 18% for small growth. Go, go, go. Russell 2000 Index, which measures small cap and very small companies, is about 17.5%. Rock and roll, coochie coo. Russell 2000 value, what we have there, is about 15%. So ladies and gentlemen, I hope you own small, because small value and small growth is absolutely smoking. 11 months into the year, they are heads and shoulders the winner and asset classes for this year so far. But respectfully, not too far behind, about halfway behind, would be the large cap. Value about 8.8 and growth about 7.8. These would be the Russell 1000 Value Index and the S&P 500. Now, one of the things that I have noticed, I've talked about this on many occasions, is the fact that I notice a lot of people in the traditional portfolio mixtures with all the major firms, it doesn't matter which one it is, I find a strong percentage of large cap growth in most people's portfolios. But yet, ladies and gentlemen, if you were to go back, let's say 25, 30, 40 years and look what asset class has won, you wouldn't see large hop up there that often. In fact, you see small an awful lot. You see international small an awful lot. So it's interesting that for years in analyzing portfolios, I predominantly see large U.S. companies as a heavy percentage. And I mean 30, 40, 50, 60% weighting is very common. And, you know, it's not doing bad this year, but this is probably why most people are not seeing their portfolios double every 10 years or 7 to 10 years like they should if they're really getting 10+% annualized returns net of fees. In fact, I'm going to talk about fees, ladies and gentlemen, when we're done with the market update. And I'm going to pull the scales from your eyes or give you some information that can knock the scales from your eyes and maybe give you a different perception of how the fee structure works as it relates to investments in our country. But anyway, back to the market update. Morgan Stanley Capital International World Index. This index really looks at and measures, it's designed to measure the equity performance of developed markets, France, Portugal, Singapore, Spain, Sweden, UK, etc. about 2% for the year. So international, a little shaky this year. It smoked last year. I mean, it rocked and rolled last year. Huge. 70, 80, 90% by the time the year was over. For those of us that understand the concept of rebalancing and locking in our gains and not just chasing the market, we did quite well with international last year. Let's go into the emerging markets, Morgan Stanley Capital International Emerging Markets Index, which is about 8.7. That is the winner in the international arena, ladies and gentlemen. It is the winner in the international arena, and that would be the emerging markets. So you got emerging market countries like Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Peru, Poland, Russia, South Africa, Taiwan, to name a few. And they're really strong as it relates to returns in the international arena. And then, of course, the dog of 2010 as of November 30th would be November 30th business close would be the Morgan Stanley Capital International EAFE. That would be the Europe, Australia, and Far East, which really is a free-floating adjusted market capitalization index that's designed to measure equity market performance of developed markets, but excluding the U.S. and Canada. So when we take the U.S. and Canada out, the rest of the world is apparently having some challenges. So basically, ladies and gentlemen, to kind of tie off my point with the market update this week, I hope you're diversified. I hope you're in it. I hope you're in it for the long term. I hope whoever you're working with, they're rebalancing and not just chasing the market. I hope you truly own all these asset classes in commensurate percentages. And a great place to look for those percentages would be in the studies of Harry Markowitz, who won the Nobel Prize for Modern Portfolio Theory. And I have never heard anyone dispute that he is not someone that we would adhere to the science that he's produced. In fact, he created the math that we use in the industry. So, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're diversified. If you're not, then you're just chasing the market, and I wonder what the cost is. In fact, that brings us to our spotlight for this week, which is fees. Now, let's move on and talk about that a little bit. Fees are something very few people understand, ladies and gentlemen. I have found that they are something that very few advisors understand because I was an advisor for many years and I didn't understand them. So I know that there's a lot of advisors out there that don't understand them, especially if they're registered reps of a brokerage firm, whether it be a big one or a small one or whatever, versus registered investment advisors that are independent and registered directly with the Securities and Exchange Commission, which is what you want. You want an independent registered investment advisor in Paul's opinion. And you want to pay you want to have an institutional platform and get away from commissions. And the only way to get away from commissions that I'm aware of is to not deal with someone's name who's registered rep. It needs to say registered investment advisor representative, not just registered representative. But that's another conversation for another time. But let me go ahead and spend the next few minutes. I want to try to keep these podcasts about 20 minutes a week to fees. And really, what is it costing you to pursue investing in your portfolio and to work with the current person that you may or may not be working with? You know, when it comes to making decisions as it relates to investments, many people are not prepared. In fact, many advisors, I shouldn't say many, there are some advisors that aren't prepared, but it's important that you need help with someone. Someone needs to help coach you up as it relates to portfolio, modern portfolio theory, and the three-factor model, and the efficient market hypothesis, and the science behind investing. And hopefully you've learned some from our podcast. I know there's a plethora of information that I've recorded, literally hundreds of hours of information. But really, when you start to work with an advisor, what is it really going to cost you? And I want to make sure that you just don't ask them what it costs to work with them, but what are the total costs? I think this is very important. And for you advisors that may be listening in that are telling your clients when they ask you 1%, shame on you, because you're not being totally forthright and full disclosure. And let me tell you something, advisors, if I may be so bold, if we don't police ourselves, then the industry is going to be policed by the government. And this is what happens, I've noticed. You know, greed, I don't want to get on a rant here, but I've always noticed that ego and greed are the two things that in my own personal life that I've looked back on in my life experience and I've observed other people seem to be the things that always get people. And I think if we police ourselves, keep things in check, a modest income should be sufficient for most people out there, all people for that matter, you're never going to get in a situation where you have to have a government come in and police you. But anyway, that's another subject for another time. Outside of the point that I want to make, if you will just be more forthright, and you know, most American consumers, in my opinion, do not have a problem with paying a fee. They just want to understand what's going on and what are they paying for, and what are all the fees, including the ones that, for lack of a better word, can I say hidden? I don't want to. You know, every time you point a finger, you got three pointed back at you. So as I get older, I'm less apt to point fingers. And when I talk about this kind of stuff, I'm really pointing to an industry more than individual advisors. But with that being said, I would encourage you to be forthright and give people the total cost, because we know there's three of them, and one of them is the actual advisor fee. Now, some people pay that in the form of a commission by buying certain shares of mutual funds. I talked about that in the last show. And some people avoid that that inherent conflict of commissions by just going with the flat fee. Whatever your situation is, you're going to pay a management fee of some kind to an advisor. And that fee could be as much as 3%. Some advisors charge 1%, some charge 1.25%, some charge 1.5%, some charge 2%, up to 3%. Everybody's different, okay? And this can be found in a financial document that is required by law that the advisor give you, called the Form ADV and Schedule F. And certainly if you come in our office or would like to request that, we can get that to you, Form ADV and Schedule F. And it's a federal disclosure document that each advisor is required to provide. And the fees should be very clearly delineated in there, and that's how you find out what the advisor fee. But the asset management fee is not the only cost you're going to incur when you're dealing with an advisor, but you also have to pay for the recommendation the advisor makes or the fund that they might suggest to you. And there's two charges or fees that are associated with that. One would be fixed expenses, and the other would be variable expenses or fees. So let's talk a little bit about the fixed expenses, which are included in, they normally call it the annual expense ratio. You can find this in a prospectus, and every mutual fund and exchange-traded fund charges this, even so-called no-load funds, which I've always got kind of tickled me a little bit, no-load funds. That does not mean they're load-free. It just doesn't mean you're paying a commission on the front or the back end, but you're probably paying, in fact, you are paying a higher management fee from year to year. And that, of course, will be clearly laid out in the prospectus, which you should be sent every, is it quarter or year for sure, but you can request it any time. This brings us to the final fee, and this is the one that is really kind of the tricky one, if you will. I don't like to use those terms, but for lack of a better term, the tricky ones, okay? And to find it, you must look in a totally different document, and unfortunately, many investors are not familiar with this document, and unfortunately, even more unfortunate is that there are advisors who are not familiar with this document, and it's called the Statement of Additional Information, and this will lay out a variable cost, and normally it's in the form of an expense ratio percentage, but you never really know what that is till after the fact, because that's really the active trading cost. There's something called the bid-ask spread. Now, you don't want to say that too fast, but the bid-ask spread is basically what Wall Street gets, or the override for any trading that takes place. There's a bid price and an ask price. Depending on whether you're selling or buying, you're paying a different price. That override or fee is called the bid-ask spread, or it could be the NAV pop spread as it relates to mutual fund. Bid-ask would be on stocks. NAV and pop, net asset value and public offering price, would be on mutual funds. And this bid-ask spread price depends on the turnover of the fund. You know, if you have a fund that turns over, let's say a mutual funds for the novice is made up of 100 different stocks or individual companies, and let's say that the money manager from day to day is looking at those companies and decides that based on different news that's happening or different reports that are laid out or press releases or earnings reports, they may buy or sell in any given day a company, and they'll buy another company to replace that company. Well, at the end of the year, it's not uncommon. According to Morningstar numbers right now, the last report I read in here in 2010 was about 94% was the average turnover in Morningstar when you look at all the data there. So that means that almost 100% of the portfolio is different than what it really started as, or this a lot of trading has taken place. Now, those trades and that cost is passed on to you and I, ladies and gentlemen, in the form of a variable trading cost that's in the statement of additional information. So when you start to look into the cost of investing, there's really three fees: the advisor fee, the actual expense fee of the fund, the expense ratio for the administrative cost, and so on, and then the actual trading cost that is not perpetrated by you, ladies and gentlemen, but the actual mutual fund manager who is consistently and I believe hyperactively in most cases trading to try to win. Now, their motivation is to win, not to generate a bunch of erroneous fees, but in fact, that's what's happened. In fact, I have found that in most of my research and research that I have read and studied from many academics, from many notable institutions, mostly universities around the country, is that these variable trading costs can be as much as the actual advisor fee and the annual expense ratio combined. So a lot of times people might think they're paying 2.5 to 3% in fees when they may be paying 3 to 4% in fees. And when you ask your advisor what the fees are, you should get a total number and not just his or her part of the fee. And I think those advisors that are more forthright and upfront have long-term clients and don't have to worry about the lack of information. Let me back that up and just say, I believe education leads to clarity. Clarity leads to confidence, and confidence can result in peace of mind. This is why I do the podcast. This is why I did the syndicated radio show for years. This is why I was on the TV news here with NBC and Channel 6 locally for almost a year and gave that up based on time restraints, because I believe education is paramount. It's absolutely vital. People will come to the self-realization and an epiphany that I have come to if they understand the information that I've had access to. Why would you not do what I suggest you do if this is what I study and this is my profession? If I was to learn what you did for a living and say, hey, why do you do what you do this way? You would say, this is what I've learned over many years, that this is the most efficient way to do something. Why would I not do what you suggest to do if that's your vocation and that's your expertise? So, ladies and gentlemen, it's hard for those of you out there that are do-it-yourselfers. Let me encourage you. I had one client in particular. In fact, he did a few radio shows with me. A guy I respect, a Vietnam vet, and a very savvy guy. He's a guy that was probably one of the only portfolios I've ever analyzed that I said you should probably keep it. And this was a guy that was, you know, studying everything, reading everything, low-cost funds, doing the stuff. But he could not rebalance and really do the stuff that he needed to do in the retail environment as efficiently as some advisors can do in an institutional environment. So for you do-it-yourselfers, you may be hurting yourself for a couple reasons, not having really the information you need to understand how to really diversify a portfolio, but then not really having access to the type of investments rather than dealing with super no-load type institutional funds or institutional funding. What you normally are doing are dealing with retail funds, which is basically everything else out there. So I encourage you, do-it-yourselfers, if you want to learn more about how to invest prudently, we've got an advisor guide that I would love to send you. It's called the Investor Awareness Guide. It explains the investor dilemma. It's something that I think you will glean a lot of information from and maybe hopefully have a paradigm shift that perhaps could benefit you in some small way in your life. If you'd like to request that, just go to financialabundanceinc.com or just type in financial abundance in Google. We should come up there. And you can ask the coach right there at the main homepage, and you can ask a question or request that guide, and we'll send it to you. For those of you that may not be on the internet, but although you're on iTunes, so you must be on the internet, you can always call us directly, 866-867-5745, 866-867-5745. My name is Paul Nichols. I'm your host, and my firm is called Financial Abundance. We believe in abundance, financial abundance. If you'd like to learn more, type in financial abundance, do a search. There's a plethora of information on our website. And if you'd like a guide, reach out. And we will touch you back. We'll hit you back. This is Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. Hope you have a safe first week of December. We'll look forward to talking to you next week with the market update, which is hopefully as happy and as pleasing as this one was this week. Otherwise, happy investing. And listen, folks, turn the news off. It's the best thing you can do for your peace of mind. Turn it off. Have a great day.